We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Warning, the following contains spoilers pertaining to the show and subject matter discussed. Also, strong language and adult content may be included. Listener discretion is advised. Thank you.
The next stop is 49th Street.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Are you all right over there?
I'm so excited for tonight!
You look like you are about to bounce off the walls.
I've been counting down the days until we got to see the show. It's one of, if not my favorite, shows.
It's a classic, that's for sure. I'm super excited to finally see a show at the Palace.
It's a gorgeous theater and such a fitting place for this amazing show.
You're right there. And it's a good thing we're almost there. You're about to explode.
Next to the Tony Awards, this is basically Christmas for me. Yay, we're here! All right, let's do this. I can't wait for the overture.
This is a Brooklyn-bound N Express train. The next stop is Times Square, 42nd Street.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Stage Whisper. I'm your host, Hope Bird, and with me is my co-host, Andrew Cortez.
Today we are going to be discussing the legendary show, West Side Story.
So hurry and take your seats, it looks like the show is starting.
Hello everyone. And welcome into today's performance of Stage Whisper. Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. And you don't even have to wait, because today we are going to be talking about the landmark musical West Side Story. This show is a cornerstone of musical theater. And so with that, let us venture back to its humble beginnings.
Jerome Robbins approached Leonard Bernstein and Arthur Lorentz in 1947 about collaborating on a contemporary musical adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. The original story focused on a conflict from an Irish Catholic family and a Jewish family in the Lower East Side.
They called it East Side Story. After it was completed, the group realized that the themes discussed were similar to the play that already exists, Abbey's Irish Rose. The group split and the project was left alone for 5 years.
After a collaboration in 1955, the group got back together and decided to revisit East Side Story. This is when a young Stephen Sondheim was brought on.
They then thought to set their story in L.A., but Lorentz felt he was more familiar with the Puerto Ricans living in Harlem than he was with the Mexican-Americans living in Alvera Street.
Bernstein and Lorentz liked the idea of a musical with a Latin beat. Bernstein and Lorenz changed the name to West Side Story to set the story in an area on the Upper West Side that has conflicts between Puerto Ricans and Caucasians.
The parents were deleted from the story in the early parts of the development. Curse words were uncommon in the theater at the time, and there was worry that slang expressions would be dated by the time the production opened.
Lorenz ultimately invented what sounded like real street language, but was not actually street language. Sondheim converted long passages of dialogue and turned them into simple phrases.
The dark theme, sophisticated music, extended dance scenes, and focus on social problems marked a turning point in musical theater.
Bernstein composed West Side Story and Candide at the same time, which led to some switches of material between the two works. The show was almost complete in the fall of 1956, but almost everyone on the creative team had other commitments they needed to fulfill first.
During rehearsal, producer Cheryl Crawford pulled out. In search for a new producer, Sondheim convinced friend Hal Prince to come hear the show.
Robbins did not want to choreograph the show at first, but when Prince agreed to an 8-week dance rehearsal instead of the customary 4, he couldn't say no.
All of the revivals prior to 2009 used the same costumes, lights, and set pieces as the original production.
In 2007, Lorenz stated, "I've come up with a way of doing West Side Story that will make it absolutely contemporary without changing a word or note." The new production wove Spanish lyrics and dialogue into the English libretto, which is why they needed new sets and costumes.
Lorenz is quoted in saying the musical theater and cultural conventions of 1957 made it next to impossible for the characters to have authenticity. Every member of both hands were always a potential killer even then. Now they actually will be. Only Tony and Maria live in a different world.
Now for this episode, we are mainly going to focus on the 2009 production. So with that in mind, let's lay out the design team.
The set was by James Yeomans, costumes by David C. Woolard. The reproduction choreography was by Joey McNeely, lights by Howell Binkley, sound design by Dan Moses Schreier, hair by Mark Adam Rampmeyer, and makeup by Angelina Avalone.
Music by Leonard Bernstein, lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, book by Arthur Lorenz, translations by Lin-Manuel Miranda, original conceiver, director, and choreography by Jerome Robbins, directed by Arthur Lorenz.
The musical first opened on Broadway on September 26, 1957 at the Winter Garden Theater. It ran for 732 shows, closing on June 27, 1959.
The revival we are discussing opened on March 19, 2009 at the Palace Theater. It ran for 748 performances and closed on January 2, 2011.
The show was nominated for 4 Tony Awards and would mambo away with 1 for Best Featured Actress in a Musical for Karen Olivo, who played Anita.
So, that's a lot of information, but now, let's delve into our story.
Rival teenage gangs, the Jets, white Americans, and the Sharks, Puerto Ricans, struggle for control of their neighborhood on the Upper West Side of New York City. They are warned by police officers Krupke and Lieutenant Schrenk to stop fighting on their beat. The police chase the Sharks off, and then the Jets plan how they can assure their continued dominance of the street.
The Jets' leader, Riff, suggests setting up a rumble with the Sharks. He plans to make a challenge to Bernardo, the Sharks' leader, that night at the neighborhood dance.
Riff wants to convince his best friend and former member of the Jets, Tony, to meet the Jets at the dance. Some of the Jets are unsure of his loyalty, but Riff is affirmant that Tony is still one of them.
Riff meets Tony while he's working at Doc's drugstore to persuade him to come. Tony initially refuses, but Riff wins him over. Tony is convinced that something important is around the corner.
We then meet Maria, who works in a bridal shop with Anita, the girlfriend of her brother, Bernardo. Maria has just arrived from Puerto Rico for her arranged marriage to China, a friend of Bernardo's.
Maria confesses to Anita that she is not in love with Chino. Anita makes Maria a dress to wear to the neighborhood dance.
At the dance, after introductions, the teenagers begin to dance. Soon, a challenge dance is called, during which Tony and Maria, who aren't participating, see each other across the room and are drawn to each other.
They dance together, forgetting the tension in the room, and fall in love. Once Bernardo sees what is happening, he pulls his sister from Tony and sends her home.
Riff and Bernardo agree to meet for a war council at Doc's because the drugstore is considered to be neutral ground.
Meanwhile, an infatuated and happy Tony finds Maria's building and serenades her outside her bedroom. She appears on her fire escape and the two profess their love for one another.
And still at the very same time, Anita, Rosalia, and the other shark girls discuss the differences between the territory of Puerto Rico and the mainland United States, with Anita defending America and Rosalina yearning for Puerto Rico.
The Jets get antsy while waiting for the sharks inside Doc's. Riff helps them let out their aggression.
The sharks arrive to discuss weapons to use in the rumble. Tony, who arrives just before the sharks, suggests a fair fight, fists only, which the leaders agree to, despite the other members' protests.
Bernardo believes that he will fight Tony, but must settle for fighting Diesel, Riff's second-in-command instead.
This is followed by a monologue by the ineffective Lieutenant Shrank, trying to find out the location of the rumble.
Tony tells Doc about Maria, and Doc is worried for them, while Tony is convinced that nothing can go wrong, because he is in love.
The next day, Maria is in a very happy mood at the bridal shop as she anticipates seeing Tony again. But she is left dismayed when she learns about the upcoming rumble from Anita.
When Tony arrives, Maria insists that he must stop the fight altogether, which he agrees to do. But before he does, they dream of their wedding.
Tony, Maria, Anita, Bernardo, and the Sharks, and Riff and the Jets all anticipate the events to come that night.
The gangs meet under the highway, and as the fight between Bernardo and Diesel begins, Tony arrives and tries to stop it. Though Bernardo taunts and provokes Tony, ridiculing his attempt to make peace, Tony keeps his composure.
When Bernardo pushes Tony, Riff punches him in Tony's defense. The two draw switchblades and get in a fight, and an all-out rumble ensues.
Tony attempts to intervene, inadvertently leading to Riff being fatally stabbed by Bernardo. Tony then kills Bernardo in a fit of rage, which in turn provokes an all-out fight like the prologue.
The sound of approaching police sirens is heard and everyone scatters, except Tony, who stares in shock at what he has done. The tomboy Anybody's, who stubbornly wishes that she could become a Jet, tells Tony to flee from the scene at the last moment and flees with the knives.
Only the bodies of Riff and Bernardo remain.
End of Act 1. The top of Act 2 starts with Maria, who is blissfully unaware that the rumble has taken place with fatal consequences, giddily singing to her friends Rosalia, Teresita, and Francisca that she is in love.
Chino brings the news that Tony has killed Bernardo, then leaves. Maria prays that what he has told her is a lie. Tony arrives to see Maria, and she initially pounds on his chest with rage, but still she loves him.
They plan to run away together. As the walls of Maria's bedroom disappear, they find themselves in a dreamlike world of peace.
Two of the Jets, Arab and Baby John, are set on by Officer Krupke, but they manage to escape him. They meet the rest of the gang. To cheer themselves up, they lampoon on Krupke and the other adults who don't understand them.
Anybody's arrives and tells the Jets that she has been spying on the Puerto Ricans. She has discovered that Chino has a gun and is looking for Tony. The gang separates to find Tony and protect him. Action has taken charge. He accepts anybody's into the Jets and includes her in the search.
A grieving Anita arrives at Maria's apartment. As Tony leaves, he tells Maria to meet him at Doc's so they can run away to the country. In spite of her attempt to conceal it, Anita sees that Tony has been with Maria and launches an angry tirade against him.
Maria counters by telling Anita how powerful love is, and Anita realizes that Maria loves Tony as much as she had loved Bernardo. She admits that Chino has a gun and is looking for Tony.
Lieutenant Schrank arrives to question Maria about her brother's death, and Anita agrees to go to Doc's to tell Tony to wait. Unfortunately, the Jets, who have found Tony, have congregated at Doc's, and they taunt Anita with racist slurs and eventually attempt rape.
Doc arrives and stops them. Anita is furious and in anger, spitefully delivers the wrong message, telling the Jets that Chino has shot Maria dead.
Doc relays the news to Tony, who has been dreaming of heading to the countryside to have children with Maria. Feeling there is no longer anything to live for, Tony leaves to find Chino begging for him to shoot him as well.
Just as Tony sees Maria alive, Chino arrives and shoots Tony. The Jets, sharks, and adults flock around the lovers. Maria holds Tony in her arms and sings a quiet, brief reprise of the song Somewhere as he dies.
Angry at the death of another friend, the Jets move towards the sharks, but Maria takes Chino's gun and yells at everyone that all of them killed Tony and the others because of their hate for each other, and now she can kill too because she has hate.
However, she is unable to bring herself to fire the gun and drops it, crying in grief. Gradually, all the members of both gangs assemble on either side of Tony's body, showing that the feud is over.
The Jets and Sharks form a procession and together carry Tony away with Maria, the last one in the procession.
The end. Let's discuss the things we like and the things, well, we like.
There's no disagreeing that this show is a powerhouse.
This is in my top three shows, if not my number one show. Like, this is, like, we're reading the story and I'm getting all teary-eyed just thinking about it. I mean, we're recording here right now. I'm looking at the poster from the revival and it's so amazing. It's such a cliche. I feel like a lot of people spoof it and they kind of make fun of it. Honestly, anyone who's seen West Side Story, and a good West Side Story, not just like, you know, your middle school production or something like that, a truly good West Side Story, there are no words.
I really hope by the end of this discussion you will tell us exactly why this is your favorite show.
Yes. Oh, I will. And actually when I was working today and I was driving around, I was thinking about, as we were going to record today, I was like, okay, I got to figure out what it is about the show that I absolutely love. And I already know the answer to that. We'll get to it. But let's start checking the boxes. So first things first, let's talk about the plot.
I mean, it's Romeo and Juliet.
It's classic story. It's iconic. But more than that, I mean, it is Romeo and Juliet, but it's got a slight twist, you know, because we have to see Romeo, who is Tony, essentially, persuaded to be involved.
Involved in what?
In the show. Where in Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, there was no, like, come on, Romeo, come do this, come do that, like, let's go do this, let's go to a party. Like, no, like, he was already with the group of friends, he was already going with them. We had to see Riff really push Tony to come to the dance and come do this and And the whole time, Tony was like, no, I'm moving on. I've got it. I'm a soda jerk now. I'm doing this. If Tony had rebuffed Riff's advances, if Riff had not, you know, spermed a worm, wombed the tomb him, that's how he convinced Tony, like, come on, we're brothers.
Mm-hmm.
None of this would have happened.
Right, so what you're saying is basically Tony was, like, basically forced to play the role of Romeo.
Exactly. This is the story of Romeo and Juliet, but again, with a twist. You know, Romeo had to be pushed in. To me, West Side Story is a great balance of heavy drama and comedy. And when I say comedy, I mean, you know, you got the wise cracking, you know, the jets here, you know, and they make fun of Officer Krupke and everything. And then, of course, you've got the also equally wise cracking Puerto Ricans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, what I like is the Puerto Ricans were not cast in such a stereotype that's super offensive. It was how we as a general American population looked at Puerto Ricans. And if you left going, I don't like the way that was depicted. It's like, well, yeah, that's how we looked at them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they reacted. That is how society viewed them and how they kind of coped with it. But at the same time, we got a view into their culture, and how they felt about things. One of my favorite songs, which is America, you know, things are bad here, but where we're coming from, it's even worse. You know, it's such an upbeat song, but it's also kind of like terrible
mm-hmm.
at the same time. So I think that balance of drama and comedy make a good balanced show can't go wrong. You can't have it heavy on one side or the other. It can't be raucous and hilarious the whole 2.5 hours. And
raucous.
It can't be heavy and dramatic and, you know, for 2.5 hours. Nobody wants to experience that. You need peaks and valleys, you know? And I think this does a really good job with that. And it's an iconic story. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And fun fact for all of you listening out there, the movie and the musical, there are differences in it.
Yes.
The storyline does go a little bit different.
Yes.
Moving on to the lights. Again, we're dealing with the revival. I thought the lights really helped in enhancing the story.
Yes, because it made really beautiful, like, highlights and shadows. Yes. It really gave you that underground experience when you needed it. But
and
then
it was almost
got
like this comic book thing, too, or like a noir sense, too.
Yes.
It wasn't this, like, super, everybody was lit so you could see them, but it wasn't, it was almost, I don't want to say grungy, but it had like a film, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. No, it was like almost like the lights were textured.
Yes. 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 And it was perfect because it added that element to it. This is a dated show. Okay. I'm sorry. This show does not exist today.
It predates hair.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I'm not saying the subject matter cannot exist today. I'm saying the show itself is placed in a different time.
Mm-hmm.
The lessons and everything can be transferred to a current date and time, but the actual story is of a different time. And that's fine. But with that, I love that the lighting designer didn't try to hide it. In fact, they tried to enhance it. And it was brilliant. Also, the use of gobos was amazing. They didn't use fences or bars and whatnot a lot as like set pieces or props. They use lights to create that on stage,
mm-hmm.
to especially for like the rumble in that.
Yes.
You know, we had this backdrop that we saw of like the highway, but then there were like fences.
Well, and that's it. I'm thinking of the final scene where Tony is dead, and I'm trying to remember if there were actual set pieces that moved them into the basketball court.
No.
Type looking
no,
place,
no, no.
Or if it was just lights.
There was a basketball hoop in the back with the one light, like the street light.
Mm-hmm.
And you had that like just dark grungy look, and this beautiful. I mean, it was just this beautiful, picturesque. It's a beautiful scene. I'm sorry, I'm at a loss for words because I'm seeing this. The way that they use the lights to basically sculpt out this scene. And then, of course, the shadows from the buildings is the other cool thing in that scene. They didn't have to bring in set pieces to show this court existed between buildings. They used shadows. I was more thinking during the Rumble, there was that tunnel. Remember? Uh-huh. That's how they got, because they had two spots. There was a fence, and there was this tunnel in between the fence. So they all came in behind the fence, and they all went through the tunnel. They crawled over the fence. They had the Rumble, and then anybody's came in and grabbed Tony, and they climbed the fence back over, and they left.
Uh-huh.
They put the fence gobo on the stage to show there was more fence than just that one piece.
Mm-hmm.
That fence didn't go the length of the stage. It was just that one, and we saw it. But because of the lighting,
it really felt like there were fences everywhere. And they were somewhere
trapped, and it felt like almost a cage. And we were watching this fight in a cage, you know? And it created a whole nother level to all of this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was so good.
Well, another thing I love about this show is their use of color. Not just color in the lights, but especially color in the costumes.
I was about to say, I know where you're going with the costume. The palette is perfect. The Jets are in these blues and browns and... Yeah, blues and browns because the adults are in grays.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the Sharks and their girls in that in these reds and violets. And
purples.
Yeah, and these gorgeous colors that really pop and counteract it. And, I got to be honest, what I love is, you know, the Sharks are supposed to be the poorer side. They look wealthier than the Jets.
Yeah. Well, and they actually, and I think it also goes to speak about, the way that they were raised and the way that, like, Puerto Ricans present themselves is, you know, when I am presenting myself, as a polished person.
Yes.
You know, whereas, like, the Jets are like, I got no money, so I'm just going to dress like I have no money, you know, kind of thing.
There's two characters I'm thinking of, and I hope I'm remembering this right, that stand out on those color palettes. When Tony goes to the dance, I think he's in a red shirt. And when Maria goes to the dance, she's in a white dress with a blue sash.
I think so.
I know for sure the white dress with the blue sash. Because I remember when they...
Was it a blue sash or was it like the blue ribbing on the skirt?
It's the blue ribbing on the skirt. Yeah. You've got the picture pulled up here. Yeah. And he's got, I think he's got a red shirt underneath that blue coat, I think. But the reason why that's significant is obviously they're wearing, that's Bernardo. I'm sorry. They're wearing, Tony and Maria are wearing the other side's colors.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Maria looks very virginal and innocent in that white, but the fact that, you know, it's these little details that you're like, wow, you know.
Yeah.
I love the ruffled dresses for the Shark Girls, the Sharkettes, if you will. I love seeing them in America. I love America, you know. Da, 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 da. I loved the suits the men wore. I wonder if they were silk shirts because they felt like silk.
They felt like silk? You mean they looked like silk?
Listen. It was so gorgeous. I thought that the costuming was done really, really well.
I completely agree. It just felt very real and the color helped tell the story and...
They didn't have to stretch too far. They didn't try to reinvent the wheel, which was the best part. Going along with costumes, before I kind of get to
they don't know what order we're going in.
No, I know, but you asked me a question. Okay. Why do I love this show? There are three reasons I love this show. And the first is obviously the story, but with the story goes the next part I want to talk about, which is the direction. The direction of the show is perfect. The stage is always balanced. Your focus is always where it needs to be. and there's never too much going on. Like, you're not missing something. So if you're watching the two people downstage, you don't need to be worrying about what the people upstage are doing. It's not like what they're doing upstage is important for the story. Everyone's there for a purpose. If you're not serving a purpose, you're not meant to be there. Everything is balanced. Everything works. It's functional. Okay. The show itself feels alive. It feels like it's breathing. Like I mentioned, it has these perfect highs and lows. The build-ups feel real and they feel natural, and the emotion feels genuine. Okay? It doesn't feel melodramatic.
Okay.
Everything feels like it leads from one to the other to the other. I never feel like Tony is reaching to overreact. You know, there are some times when people see the, you know, the Maria. It's a little like, oh man, like who's really going to yell that? No, the way that the direction is done on this show, this is a masterclass in subtext. There's a reason why he's screaming out her name as opposed to Riff's after the Rumble. It's like, that's your brother, essentially, that got killed. So why are you calling out Maria's name? Well, you know why, and it's a natural buildup. Everything just naturally leads from one to the other. It is a storybook thing of human emotion and human reaction. And then the fact that they added the Spanish in this revival, the I Feel Pretty and everything.
Well, and more than just the I Feel Pretty, what they did with a boy like that,
yes,
it was almost like Spanglish, which definitely, you know, I don't know if you've ever met someone who speaks both English and Spanish. I mean, I know you have, but someone, any of our listeners, you know, especially when you come from those two different worlds, or especially if you meet someone who has to, like, translate for their parents, mm-hmm. when they start getting emotional, especially as Anita mm-hmm. is, they switch back and forth between the two, and that's exactly. kind of where that Spanglish came from.
Exactly, and that's why it feels very natural and very real. It doesn't feel acted. I didn't feel like I was at the theater. I genuinely felt like this was real life.
And the parts that they did make Spanish, they felt natural, and I mean, even if you don't speak Spanish, you knew exactly what they were saying.
Well, and it wasn't like we're speaking Spanish in front of the Jets. This is like they're in the bridal shop and everything, and you were like, I could totally, that felt real. They probably would speak Spanish like that. Why would they speak English if they all speak Spanish? And no, they would totally just speak their native tongue or whatever. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The show felt natural, and that's coming from the direction. And it was the original director who took the helm to do the revival. And
it wasn't the original director. It was the original book writer.
Arthur Lorentz?
Yeah. Jerome Robbins was the original director. I'm sorry. Director.
Yeah. One of the original.
Conceptors.
Yeah. So I would put that as number three reason why I love it. I'm going to go to number two reason why I love it. It's my favorite show. The choreography. When you think of Broadway choreography, okay, and we've mentioned this before when we've done other shows like A Chorus Line and that, but West Side Story is definitely one of the most iconic choreographies ever.
Yes, like you can't think of Broadway musicals without thinking of that image of the Jets doing that snap jump.
I mean,
all at the same time.
The snap is as iconic as the kick line, as iconic as the Fosse.
As iconic as Rent in the spotlights.
Yeah, I mean, all, if someone starts snapping, we immediately go, it's West Side Story. Something's about to go down. Like, that's fighting. We had these gangs fighting, and it, you know, everyone, again, when you're younger, you kind of laugh at it. But instead of having literal violence, they were using ballet choreography to fight. And it's gorgeous. And it's raw. And it's real. And
it's artistic.
What I love is, you know, there's this thing that you're taught when you're studying musical theater. And the question you're asked when you first start is, you know, why in the musical theater do we sing? And the answer is because we have no other way of expressing. There's something happening, we have no other way of expressing. So we go to the next thing, and it's music. The same thing can be applied to dance. Why do we dance? Because we have no other way of expressing something we feel. So this choreography is historic, and it's legendary.
Well, and the choreography is treated, yes, it's treated like a ballet, but it's like, this show is to, you know, to musical theater, like Phantom of the Opera, or no, not even Phantom of the Opera, like Rent is an opera,
even though it's rock, you know. This is that, but dancing.
Yes, and the choreography of the show is at the same level and importance as the music, the lyrics, the book.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of this choreography and still have West Side Story, which we'll talk about later. It's expressive and it's emotive. In fact, you've got a picture, and I love this picture you've got pulled up because it's, I remember discussing this image and this choreography with several teachers in school.
Well, and seeing it talked about in Broadway, the American Musical.
There's a great scene where it's in the prologue. And they are dancing, and they basically, they kick one leg and they lift up on the other, and they have their hand, their left hand out in a straight line, horizontal line, and their right hand is reaching up, okay? So they've made like a right angle. And basically what it appears that they're trying to do is they're trying to lift up, to reach out, to escape, if you will. Their whole upper body is like yearning to reach out and escape, but they're still connected to this world that they're in.
Because it's the same story that you always hear about people who live in the
poverty
neighborhood,
in the
rough neighborhood. It's no matter how hard you try to elevate yourself, to do better,
exactly,
to be better, you're always held because of your connection to your neighborhood.
And I understand some people might go, well, no, that's not exactly what it means. Yes, no, it is, because this move could easily have been turned into a leap, but it's not. It's on releve. They lift their leg, their toe. It's still attached to the stage. The same thing similarly happens when they're doing America, when the Sharkettes, if you are doing America, they do this beautiful extension with their leg, but their foot is still on the ground, and they lift their hands up into the air, and the other arm comes back down. They're grounded. They're connected. They can't escape. You know, and it's the brilliance of Jerome Robbins. What he was, you know, again, it's like what that, I can't think of her name right now, what she was saying about Michael Bennett. You know, the audience saw one thing, but what he intended was another. Jerome Robbins was giving you this beautiful choreography, but he was saying something else with it.
Well, because he wouldn't put the choreography in just because it's pretty. There was a thought and a reason behind everything, and that's something you get especially when your director is also your choreographer.
Well, and this, when you have the symphonic sound of Leonard Bernstein and the brilliant lyrics of Stephen Sondheim and this great choreography of Joan Robbins, they all just complement each other so freaking wow.
Right, well, because the music is witty, the lyrics are even wittier, and then the dancing complements the wit of the music and the lyrics.
The music makes you want to move. That's the other thing I love, is you don't have to reach far to want to dance. There's a great video, and I encourage you all to look it up. The LA Symphony does, they perform Mambo. And the entire audience gets on their feet, and they're singing and they're dancing with the LA Symphony. You know, they dun 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 dun, and the whole symphony goes mambo, and the audience gets into it. You know, and at one point, even the orchestra, they're dancing, they're doing the wave, the trumpets are spinning their trumpets, and I'm like, I don't know that this was all choreographed in the symphony. Bernstein's music just makes you want to move.
Right,
and
well,
Robbins harnessed that in the show and went, you have to move in this song. But at the same time, there were other songs where it's like, we just need stillness.
Yes, and it was that perfect blend of the two. One of the other sounds that keeps coming to my mind as we discuss things.
Wait. Hold off on sounds, because we're going to get there. This is just choreography right now. I know
where
you're going.
Okay, sorry, I thought we were still on music.
But yeah, so we talked about the fighting. The meltdown, the last thing I want to say is about the meltdown via the dancing cool. Like I said, why we sing in musical theater, because there's no words that can express how we feel. This, if you take this song out of context, is like the most beatnik kind of thing in the world. You know?
Yeah.
It's very hacha, whoopee, you know? Like, what the
skidoo?
Yeah, we're just saying random words and some guy's laughing and, you know, there's this weird bow, wow, dun, easy action, you know. But you watch this live and you watch these guys
you can see that tension rising.
Well, what it dropping. Is, not to sound stereotypical or racist, Latin people have always been more in tune with their emotions. You know?
Because they express it through dance. Yes. And
they just, they're more,
they're more expressive.
Yes. These young people on the jet side don't. And they don't know, the stuff that they have witnessed, not just that night of the Rumble, but their entire life, you know, because memory serves me right. We've already done Officer Krupke, so we've heard about these horrible lives that they've had growing up. They've never had an outlet for these emotions. This song is them letting everything out, you know? And they also do the I want to escape move. Ba-da-ba, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and they're just exploding.
Bursting, they're bursting to get out of whatever it is they're in that they don't even realize.
And but the whole time you're being told, keep it cool, boy.
It's enforcing that stereotype that you need to let your anger build, and the only correct way to take it out is keep through it. Your macho
well,
show of power.
As to quote another show, turn it off.
Yeah.
Cover it up. It's dealing with things two different ways, but it's brilliant the way that the choreography, rather, there's very few words in that song. Very few words. It's all about the dance. So that's my number two reason. So far we've got the direction / story. Number three, number two is the choreography. The number one reason, I love this show. Mr. Bernstein, come and take a bow. This music is everything. I have said this before. If I were to have a husband, it'd be George Gershwin, but Leonard Bernstein would be my pool boy. The moment I heard this music in the eighth grade, that's the first time I heard, like truly heard this music. We watched West Side Story after reading Romeo and Juliet. I remember just something like it infected me. I remember when we watched West Side Story, I thought it was took it as a joke. I was like, whatever, it's West Side Story. I've seen this spoofed in all these, like, in Seinfeld and things like no, this can't be good. And I remembered, like, getting just enraptured in it. And this music just got in my veins. And I was like, I need more of this. I need more of this. This is incredible. From the minute it starts to the very end, that music is gorgeous. And it's haunting. It is truly symphonic and cinematic. There is so much foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. So much foreshadowing and narratives going on throughout the entire show. You know something bad is about to happen when you hear, ba-da. It's not a... Everyone always hears that and they go, oh, and I'm like, that's not a good tone.
No, and especially, like, it's always surprised me about, what's the name of the song Tony sings?
Tonight or Somewhere.
Somewhere.
Well, they both sing it. There's a place.
No, not that song.
Something's coming, something
yes.
good.
Yes. That song. So every time, like, it sounds like it's supposed to be optimistic, but it has that level underneath it that just makes you feel uncomfortable.
But it's the syncopation. It's rushed. You're hurrying. It's like, I'm getting hustled to something and I don't know what it is. And okay. And that's what I mean by if Riff hadn't forced Tony's hand, nothing would have happened. But he forced it quickly. You know, but this music and the way the quintet right before the end of Act One happens, the overlapping arias, it's genius.
Well, that's before the Rumble.
Yeah, it's right before the end of Act One. It's genius. It's gorgeous. My favorite song in this show, which is the darkest one, is Somewhere. There's a place for us. And like I said, everyone characterizes it as this sweet and loving song, and Bernstein, wrote it so musically dark that even that first bum bum, I think it's a minor seventh if I remember right, it's written to be dark most of the time, but it has releases that make you go, oh, but it sounds so sweet. No, there's a reason why people and things like the Tony Awards use it for, like, in memoriams. It's not an optimistic song. It's a memorial of sorts. It's a hope song. But in reality, you know it's not real. There's a place for us somewhere, somehow, now, but not now. And I'm going to do this without crying. That final scene, it's dead silent. The whole show, there's an essence of noise until the very end when Tony comes out and goes, Chino, Chino, come and get me, Chino. And then you can hear a pin drop, and then he fires and he gets him, and everyone comes out.
The whole last bit just takes place in utter silence.
And then, you know, how many bullets left? Enough for you, for you, you know. And she starts crying. And then you hear that horn come in. And it just holds it there for a minute. Bum, 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 bum. No, they just hold it. And then you see everyone kind of come together. Bum, 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 bum. That's when they start grabbing. Yep, that's when they start grabbing Tony together, the two sides. And then when they exit, you just get that. Ba-dum, bum, ba-dum, bum. And I mean, oh my God. Could there be any more beautiful of an ending to a show? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, no, there can't be.
It just sticks into you. This music is just, and then The Curtain Calls, another great song, which is fantastically called Jump. Not a lot of people know about it. Check out the track. It's called Jump. It's their Curtain Call music. It's really great. It's very Bernstein-esque.
It is Bernstein. There's no reason for it to be an S because he wrote it.
But if you didn't know it was from West Side Story, you'd hear it, you'd go, it's Bernstein. But this shows, the music is just, I can't say enough about it. I just can't. It's genius. It never gets old. It's absolutely gorgeous. So, yeah, the music, the choreography, the direction, that is why this is my favorite show. The show has had several notable performers, including Karen Olivo and Cheetah Rivera, who originated the role of Anita. And fun fact, for those of you who did not tune into the Tony Awards, she and Andrew Lloyd Webber presented the award for Best Musical at the Tony Awards this year, which were held at the Winter Garden Theater on September 26th. Well, she made note of this, that it was 64 years ago to the day, on that very stage, that she debuted in the role of Anita in the original production of West Side Story. So, you know.
It's pretty cool.
I think the theater gods are kind of like, all right, everybody, get back together. Let's move on.
So worth mentioning is the 2020 Broadway revival directed by Ivan Van-Ho. They trimmed the show to 1 hour and 45 minutes. And they cut, and one of the things they did to make that happen was cut the song I Feel Pretty. The idea was to snuff out any lightness that might temper the full-blown tragedy to come. And they replaced the ballet finger-snapping with hip-hop and Latin-influenced dancing. And the cast had, iPhones during the performance.
Hove also cast a few African-Americans as Jets. That was seen by some to dangerously shift our focus away from the enduring problem of white supremacist violence. It ran for 24 performances, closing due to COVID-19. I want to stop here real quick and talk about this production just for a minute. I have thoughts. On this show, we have not lent negative feedback about shows yet, but I want to speak my mind on this one. This West Side Story has a very special place in my heart. It's a very important show to me. And I've never been in it. I've never had my hand in producing it, but it holds a special place in my heart. It's like a baby, you know. Though I applaud the creativity of it, I almost consider this the bastardization of it. The choreography is, like I said, like the music, the lyrics, the book. It's just as important to completely cast that aside. That's my first red flag, to disregard subject matter and ignore casting regarding race. That's also
well, because the show is about differences.
You can't take African Americans and white people and put them on opposite ends and not raise the stakes, if you will.
They weren't even on opposite ends. They were in the same gang against the Puerto Ricans.
Oh, see, I didn't read it that way. Oh, I'm so sorry. I did. My bad. Yeah, see, that's a problem. This show takes place at a certain period of time. To get rid of stuff, that's a fail to me.
Well, especially if you know the history about, like, the area in which this took place.
The other thing is, and worth noting, there was a cast member in the show who was with the New York City Ballet who took pictures of dancers while they were nude and then posted them without those dancers knowing. It was a big to-do. There were protests outside the theater. That person should never have been cast. Never. And when it came to light what they did, should have been fired on the spot. That conduct is just not okay in any profession, especially ours. In such a vulnerable place as the performing arts, it's not okay. This recent production was just shrouded in negative after negative. The reviews were awful for it. One review said, this show will close by June, guaranteed. It broke my heart because I was excited to see a revival and a rethinking of it. But I'm also kind of glad that we didn't get to see it because I was like, great, I don't want to. Now that I know more about it, I was just like, leave it alone. Don't mess with the classic. You don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Well, and there's a time and a place to reimagine something. But like we've talked about many times with this show particularly, you need that light and that dark in this show to make it authentic.
Absolutely.
And so if you take out all the light and all you're left with is this dark story that you can't connect with any of the characters, which defeats the point of the music.
Exactly. You need balance. And speaking of balance, now that we've done that, I want to mention that Steven Spielberg is doing a remake of the film version of the show, and it's set to be released in December. And that looks fantastic. And the other thing that gives me hope about this is Chita Rivera is assisting with that.
Okay, and didn't Stephen Sondheim also have a aid in it too?
Yeah, so in everything I've seen about that film version, that looks like Steven Spielberg's just like, I just want to like make a second copy to make sure that for all history and time, we like West Side Story is done. Because everything I've seen, if you look at the trailer for the film, and you look at the trailer for the 2009 musical, they're very similar. Steven Spielberg has been doing his homework and knows what an American treasure this is. You don't screw with the classics.
And I think the most important thing about this show is, like Arthur Lawrence said, you know, there's a way to reimagine this show to make the characters more authentic. And I really think that that is the only way you can make this show better is to make the characters authentic, which I am excited to see a filmed version where the Puerto Ricans can be authentically Puerto Rican. Absolutely. We don't have to see
Not a stereotype. Not a Ricky Ricardo. Yes.
Like whitewashed version of what it means to be a Puerto Rican. Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is pretty freaking awesome.
I can't wait. I'm excited. Thank you.
So let's talk about the impact this show has had on theater and its history.
All right, theatrical impact. It's a landmark show. It is. It is a cornerstone show. Okay, we've said that enough. I want to say another huge thing is it brought two very important characters on the scene together.
So they were friends before it started, but this solidified their working relationship. Yes,
Stephen Sondheim and Hal Prince. So that's why, theatrically, I put this down, because this is the first show these two worked on together. Mm-hmm. And, of course, anyone who knows anything about the theater knows that this is the start of something great.
This coming is like a whole nother theater universe.
As far as musical theater goes, this show had the first rape that was done on stage. As disturbing as that is, I mean, Anita's raped on stage. Now, it's not as graphic as what we know rape today, but it happens. That was a very delicate subject matter, and they got a lot of flack for doing that, you know. But I think that that was the right stake to do. I mean, what else could you do? Arthur Lorentz and Jerome Robbins understood that, for lack of a better term, you couldn't be kitchen table. You had to do something so appalling, so shocking, to make that moment be real, to make that moment...
Otherwise, you don't have a catalyst for what happens after.
Exactly.
Like, one thing I've always noticed in early retellings of Romeo and Juliet, the way that the nurse gets... I don't know. The only word I can think of is fiddled with. Doesn't seem like, you know, it would be enough to upset her to change the way that the information got delivered.
Exactly. Something has to happen to make you want to betray the person closest to you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then it was one of the first shows to portray minorities not as super hilarious stereotypes. You know, up until then... Think about this. The show came out in the 50s. Up until then, blackface, you know, the minstrel shows, we were really...
The civil rights movement hadn't even started? Well, okay, the beginnings did. Yeah. But, you know, like, but, I mean, what we know it to
we
be.
We were exacerbating, like, with Irish and Jews and Italians. We were really, like, you weren't letting people just play who they wanted to play. It was like, oh, you're Jewish, so you have to be really funny. You couldn't be dramatic and Jewish. You know what I mean? Societal impact. It brought awareness to impoverished neighborhoods. And I'm glad I put this in because I want to talk about this. This is a fun fact from another podcast called The Bowery Boys.
Shout out to The Bowery Boys. Yes. If you're not listening to them, you should listen to them.
It's a great podcast. So the show is set on the West Side. It's in a neighborhood that actually doesn't exist anymore, called San Juan Hill. If you watch the film actually was filmed in the neighborhood of San Juan Hill. And as you watch the opening number, you'll see that, like, a lot of the buildings are kind of like in rubble and whatnot. Well, that's because they were tearing down buildings to make way for the new neighborhood that now exists there, the new building projects, which is Lincoln Center. San Juan Hill used to be where Lincoln Center is. So West Side Story takes place basically between 60th and 72nd Street.
Which is funny because, like, you know, we talk about how it's about Harlem, and most people would not even consider that area anywhere near Harlem.
Right, exactly.
But back in the day, back during this time, you know, Harlem was basically anything above Columbus.
Right, right. So, you know, that's... It brought awareness about impoverished neighborhoods and the fact that this exists, which I roll my eyes out a little bit because I'm like, really? We all didn't know that poverty exists in impoverished neighborhoods and gangs and that, really? We turned our noses up to that, but...
Okay, well, let's just say, you know, the people who this show is about were not the people who were going to the theater.
That's fair. It created a show accessible by a wide range of audiences. And what I mean by that is... Isn't it great to see people not just white on stage? You know, suddenly people of Latin descendancy or whatnot would love to go see the show and see themselves or whatnot. Which also leads me to the next thing, which is it created a show that was accessible to a range of actors of different races. You know, I'm thinking back to the golden era of musical theater and whatnot, and I'm sorry, in Oklahoma, I don't remember there being, you know, Judd and Juan kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the early musical theater, you don't have a lot of characters of color. Mm-hmm. You know, West Side Story kind of started ushering in where we could have more diverse casting, which there still need to be more shows of with that, but... You know, any other thoughts that you have on that?
No, I think that you said that brilliantly.
So is this show still relevant?
Always.
Yeah. There will always be a place for West Side Story on the Great White Way.
And I think that's because of its storytelling. And, I mean, it's like the same reason why we're always constantly reinventing Romeo and Juliet. It's the story of star-crossed lovers. It's a tale of love and tragedy. It's a tale of yin and yang. It's a tale of opposites.
Yep. It's a relatable and human story. It's a tragedy, but one we all relate to.
Right.
So it's one that we'll continue to flock to and experience. It's timeless and classic for a reason, you know?
As promised, we wanted to share some of our own personal stories about experiencing the show.
So, we've seen this show twice.
In 2008 and 2009.
I mean, there's really not much else to tell. I feel like we've told most of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was so excited to finally get to see one of my favorite shows.
And I was really excited to see something at the Palace because I had... at the time, I had studied a ton about vaudeville, and being able to see the historic Palace Theater was really exciting. And then I got really excited about the show.
Yeah.
Like, I was first really excited to see the theater, and then the show just made me forget about everything I wanted to see about the theater.
And it's a gorgeous theater, it is. Meeting the cast afterwards was amazing. Everybody was so nice. So freaking nice. And... do you remember the incredibly friendly stage door manager?
That's who Lismar reminded me of.
Yes, we had a tour guide in Puerto Rico who was so nice and knowledgeable and eccentric in the best way possible.
And like, it's okay, I'm your mom now.
Yeah, and you know, that's exactly how the stage door manager was. And she always had markers. She would just pull markers out of everywhere.
Well, and she had a bag full of markers, and she would count them and make sure that they came back. And if someone, like, went to leave with it, I saw one actor come back after they had already walked away a block.
It was like she had their driver's license, and she wouldn't give it back to them until the marker came back. But she ran that thing like a well-oiled machine.
Mm-hmm.
It was brilliant. I mean... how awesome do you have to be for us to remember the stage door manager? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, there's a handful of them out there that I'm like, oh, yeah, Alex. Alex from the Schubert organization. I remember that guy.
Yes.
And the last thing I'll say is I just remember the overall experience. That show just filling up the incredible space of the Palace. The beautiful music. I would give my left arm to hear that beautiful score played in that theater again. It's just... oh. It's one of those, I can't remember the word, but you know when you, a visceral memory, I guess, or whatever, like when I hear that music, I'm immediately transported back. I can see everything. I can smell everything. I'm right there. I'm just transported back. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I can't wait to get back to New York. As things begin to return to normal and the theater world starts to turn its lights back on, we look forward to returning to see the show again.
Hopefully, you'll be able to catch West Side Story at a theater near you sometime this fall.
We'd also like to give a quick update on the reopening of Broadway.
Now playing at the Lyceum Theater, we welcome to Broadway Dana H.
After becoming the first marquee to go up since the shutdown of Broadway, we are happy to see the curtain rise on Thoughts of a Colored Man at the Golden Theater. Special shout out to cast member Esau Pritchett. So happy for you, and we cannot wait to see you in this.
All rise as To Kill a Mockingbird makes its long-awaited return to the Schubert Theater.
Fresh off receiving a special Tony Award, the incredible talents of Freestyle Love Supreme open at the Booth Theater. We are so excited that Broadway is turning its lights back on and can't wait to share in the magic of the Great White Way.
We'll be sharing special episodes when we return to New York City in just a couple of weeks.
So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez.
And I'm Hope Bird.
Reminding you to turn off your cell phones.
Unwrap your candies.
And keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please, please, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
Our theme song is Fox by Music for Wildlife. Other music on this episode provided by Quantum Jazz, The Good Louds, U.S. Army Blues, Milton Arias, and Billy Murray.